Hello, and welcome back to Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. I'm Monica Jock, your host, a scientist, and a scientific writer at the life science business of Merck KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany. In this podcast, I take a closer look at arguably the most fundamental reagent in the laboratory, water. Although fundamental, water is frequently overlooked as a reagent that must be carefully considered and correctly handled to assure quality and avoid contamination. In our last episode, Lab Water 101, or What Are We Talking About?, I considered this first point on quality. This week, we'll get more hands-on and discuss handling. If you work in a lab that's equipped with a water purification system, are you maintaining the intended water purity as you dispense, or are you accidentally introducing contaminants into your workflow? Today, we'll go over some golden rules to keep in mind when handling purified water. I don't know anyone better to guide us through this topic than my guest for today's episode. Estelle Richet is a PhD and an applications expert based in France. She's worked with the Millikue Lab Water Solutions portfolio for nearly 20 years. She's also my personal lab water guru. Hello, Estelle. I'm really glad you could join me today. How are you doing? And can you tell me what exactly you do as an applications expert?
Hi, Monica. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm doing great. Thank you. And you know, I'll take any opportunity to make sure people know how to properly use their lab water. So my job is an application expert. So what this means is that I try to answer questions from scientists. And really, I'm sometimes a bit surprised at how water quality and water handling are overlooked by scientists as factors that may influence their experimental results. So this is really work in progress for all of us. So another part of my job is to understand the potential impact of water quality on lab results. And so for this, we designed some experiments to really understand better what type of water is optimal for each specific technique that's used in the lab. So, for example, recently we've been working on PFAS, you know, the perfluorinated compounds that are also called forever chemicals.
Yes, PFAS. That is a really hot topic lately, and I've even seen it in my local newscast. So what do we need to know?
Yeah. So the issue with those is at first, I mean, they're wonderful molecules because they are resistant to water, they're resistant to grease. And so they've been used for many, many years in industry, and also they're used in our everyday products, like in nonstick pans, in fast food packaging, you know, like your pizza packaging or popcorn bags. They're also used in a lot of like in makeup, in water-resistant makeup, in stain-resistant fabrics and shoes. So really everywhere in everyday products. And the issue is that it was discovered relatively recently that they are very strong and they don't degrade very well. So they accumulate in nature. And so because of this, now they are present in our water, they're present in animals, in fish, and they're even present in our blood. So it's a concern because also they're thought to be bad for our health. They may cause some cancers or problems with our immune system. So really, this is becoming a big concern.
Okay, so this is clearly a hot topic lately and quite in the news, and I guess labs now have a lot of pressure to start testing these chemicals, but they need to be careful, I think, that they're not introducing the PFAS into their experiments themselves by way of the materials they use. And this brings us to our first golden rule for today for handling highly purified water. Consider the container. Scientists need to collect water when preparing samples and reagents for analysis, but the container itself should be carefully considered. Estelle, please give us the rule of thumb, what container for what analysis. In particular, I know you're an HPLC expert, so please especially review that one.
Yes. So normally for people doing, you know, HPLC, LCMS, and all those types of sensitive organic analyses, it's recommended to use glass as container because glass does not release any organic molecules into samples or into water. And this has been shown again and again in literature. But when we started to work on our PFAS experiments, we realized that we could not use glass because PFAS tends to stick to glass. So he would have really given us results that were lower than we would have expected. Also, we didn't realize at first that a lot of glassware can release PFAS. So, for example, you know, PTFE, like Teflon, of course, that should be avoided since it can release a lot of PFAS into samples. So we ended up having to use polypropylene bottles, which is a bit unusual for HPLC normally. And as we investigated this further, we also realized that even, you know, things as simple as pipette tips and gloves and filters, and even, you know, we thought about using foil to cover our containers, but you can't even use that because even that can release PFAS.
They truly are everywhere.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's everywhere. So this is a bit of an extreme example. In this case, we really had to be careful about everything in the lab, so about the containers we selected. But as a general rule, scientists should consider, first of all, what they analyze and make sure that these compounds cannot be released by the containers that they use for their experiments. But the second thing that's important is to look also at the sensitivity of your analysis. In our case, for PFAS, we were really analyzing PPT level, you know, nanograms per liter of PFAS. So we had to be super, super careful about contamination. But if you're doing analyses that are a bit less sensitive, then of course you won't have to be as worried about all those potential sources of contamination. So really the idea is make sure you adapt, you know, your selection of containers to what the final experiment will be. That's my take-home message, I would say.
Okay, so now that we've selected the correct container for our highly purified water, I suppose we should make sure that this container is actually quite clean before we use it to avoid contamination. So how can scientists go about doing this correctly to make sure they're working with the most clean container possible?
Yes, Monica, this is right. So this really brings us to rule number two, which is don't forget to rinse. So rinsing containers is really, really important, especially if they are brand new. So rinsing vials and bottles and all that, because they may actually contain some contamination and you don't want that contamination to be carried on into either your samples or your water. And so the cleaning procedure you will select will depend, of course, on the samples you use and on the type of analysis you're doing. So, for example, if you're doing ICP-MS, you may want to use diluted acid, like nitric acid. But on the other hand, if you're doing HPLC, maybe you would first, you know, rinse with acetone altera. And then after that, we really recommend to rinse the container several times with ultra-pure water to be sure that really there's nothing left in that vial before you collect water or your samples. One recommendation I have also is we all think about our vials, our bottles, but think about your caps as well. So make sure to rinse the inside of the cap. That can also carry contamination sometimes.
Okay, good tip. Don't forget the cap.
Yes. Also, what I wanted to mention is sometimes I receive complaints about calcium being high in ultra-pure water. And then it even happened to our R&D colleagues recently. And we found out that actually vials are often the culprit. And so that's an example of the type of contamination you may observe that can actually be due to vials that are not rinsed enough. So really be cautious about this.
Thank you for the clear summary. Our next golden rule is don't stagnate. I hope this isn't a personal advice, Estelle, because then I'll be offended, but you're talking about pure water, right?
All right. So this is actually more than for pure water. It's more about ultra pure water. So our rule is, you know, whenever possible, you should really freshly dispense your ultra pure water from your system just before you need it, just before you use it.
Okay, why is this? What's wrong with storing ultra-pure water?
I don't know if you have a dog or you know someone who has a dog. You know, you spend all this time washing your dog so he smells all nice and he's all clean. And the first thing he will do is rush to your garden and then roll in the dirt to get back some, you know, some dirt on him.
Okay, I don't have a dog, but I think the same law of physics applies to kids, Estelle. So thank you for illustrating the point.
So, but the idea is ultra-pure water is a little bit this way, which means that ultra-pure water is extremely pure, but the first thing he wants to do is find ways to become less pure. You know, nature avoids vacuum. So it will easily pick up contaminants, either from the container it's put in, or from the air of the lab, or anything it really comes in contact with. So that's the reason why we normally don't recommend to store ultra-pure water and to really use it when it's fresh. And especially what makes me nervous is when I see in labs people storing ultra-pure water in those big Nalgene carboys.
Now, what can happen?
Well, the thing is, so in those big carboys, so the first, the water you put in, it's ultra-pure at first. But then after a little bit, maybe bacteria or algae can start to develop inside without you seeing it at first. And this will happen especially if your carboy is near a window or near a source of heat. And then to make it worse, then of course those bacteria, they will start to release a lot of byproducts like nucleases or endotoxins, which can really have an effect on your experiments and are just not visible at the naked eye. And then another issue with those carboys is that it's difficult to clean the inside. So things will get worse and worse with time, especially if you top them off with fresh water, but then never clean the inside. That will get worse and worse. And then also, the container itself may release some contamination. In particular, plastic containers, they can release some plasticizers, which can have an impact on your results if you're doing organic analysis, for example. And then the last thing also is ultra-pure water can really pick up contamination from the air. So there are different things that can be present in the air. One is, you know, carbon dioxide. That's normal to have it there. So it will dilute into water and increase its resistivity. So you will have some ions there. And also volatile organics in your labs can also absorb into your water with time. So really all those should be avoided.
It sounds like ultra-pure water is a super magnet for contaminants. We got to be really careful about storage.
Yeah. And so that's why whenever possible, we recommend to use freshly purified water, even though we know sometimes you have to store it. So I understand then. But also, something I'm thinking about, if you have wash bottles in the lab, I would recommend to also replace the water on a regular basis and not let them, you know, sit there for weeks and weeks, because that can also be a source of contamination.
All right. This brings us to golden rule number 4, which I like because it sounds quite familiar. Location, location, location. We usually hear that in real estate. In the context of a lab, I'm guessing it's really important where labs position their water system. But also, having been in a few labs myself, I know they're quite busy places. And I can imagine that a lab manager doesn't always have their first pick on where they want to place their system. So, Estelle, can you tell us what is the most ideal place to install a water system in the lab, and what areas should definitely be avoided?
Yeah. So, you know, of course, the as you said, you know, there's not always very much space in labs. And so the first thing to consider is really convenience. So you may want to put your water source close to a place where you do a lot of glassware washing, for example, or near your weighing station, so the place where you prepare a lot of reagents and buffers, so that it's right there so you can use it. If there's not enough space on the bench, some systems can actually be placed either under the bench or mounted on the wall, so they can really spend a lot less space on your bench. And then you would have only the dispensing part on the bench.
Indeed. I've been in some pretty crowded labs, and that sounds like a great space-saving option.
And so in addition to this, if you if we go back to what we can recommend, it's important, as I said, water can be contaminated by its surroundings. So try to consider the cleanliness. And if you're doing really trace analyses, maybe it's good to try to put your water dispensers in a clean part of the lab where you don't have so many people working around, you know, away from foot traffic and away from areas where a lot of volatile chemicals are used, and also away from windows and air conditioning vents, because those are for sure really a source of contamination potentially for your water. And also you can also consider actually putting your water dispenser directly under a hood. That way you can really control the environment that your water is used in. The last point I would recommend is to consider flexibility. In modern systems, sometimes you can have several water dispensers, and so you can place them right in locations where they're the most convenient for you. So you don't have to cross the entire lab to go look for water. You can have it right there in front of where you need it the most on your bench.
Okay, I can imagine that this not only makes things a little more efficient in the lab, but also help scientists avoid some of the previous no-nos we've discussed, like intermediary containers that can cause contamination or exposing the water to the environmental contaminants in the lab as they transport the water across to their workbench. So
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
keep the water close to your science. That's a really good rule of thumb.
Yes. And this is really possible nowadays, so you should take advantage of this option.
Okay, the next rule is my favorite because I say it all the time to my son, but I have a feeling that you mean something different than I do. Golden rule number five is don't forget to flush. Can you tell me what you mean by this, Estelle? In the lab, of course.
All right. So, yes. So for water purification systems, especially if they have been idle overnight or for a few days, I don't know, maybe during holiday season, what can happen is that volatile molecules and bacteria from that are naturally present in your lab air can come, you know, and start to contaminate the water of the system at the point of use. So it's a good practice, you know, when you arrive in the morning, especially on a Monday morning, it's a good practice to discard the first few liters. I would say maybe just discard a little bit of water first, or flush if you want to use this term, in order to so that after that at least you can be sure that the water will be of really good quality for your experiments. And so I would recommend to do it maybe for just a minute, and that can be sufficient. And if you don't want to throw away water, now all of us are so concerned about sustainability, you can use water when you first arrive, like that in the morning, maybe to do things that are less sensitive, or maybe to rinse some glassware or something. And so that after that, the water that will come out of your system will be of the top quality for your critical work.
I like how you threw in a sustainability tip there too. So that was great, Estelle. Thank you for being my guest and my lab water guru. And I think now you're a few other people's gurus as well. I really appreciate you walking us so clearly through these golden rules. And I hope our listeners learned as much as I did. Are ghost peaks haunting your chromatograms? Perhaps unstable baselines are throwing you off tilt. Did the band in your gel pull a vanishing act? Or you can't reproduce another lab's results? Maybe it all comes down to troubled waters. In this segment, we'll troubleshoot some of these frustrating scientific predicaments with the help of our lab water experts. Today, I'm speaking with Cecilia DeVoe, an applications expert working on the MillyQ Lab Water Solutions portfolio. Hi, Cecilia. Good to see you. Can you tell our listeners what you do as an applications expert?
In fact, my role is to understand the customer's problems and mostly help them find solutions. So from time to time, we receive calls from customers having difficulties with their analysis. And my job really is to help them investigate the problem and most of all, offer them solutions.
Could you please share with me an example?
Oh, yeah. I've got an example. The other day, we received a call from a customer performing ICP MS analysis. I bet you know this type of equipment is generally used to measure amounts of metals in liquids, and sometimes trace amounts of metals down to PPT levels, in fact. And that was what this customer was doing. This type of analysis is highly sensitive to the environment of the lab. And when trace analysis is performed, clearly, you need a clean room to perform the analysis. And so this particular customer reported to me that they were continuously finding sodium in one of them sample, in some of the samples, and not in the others.
That sounds kind of frustrating and strange, perhaps time-wasting. Can you tell me how you helped the customer get to the bottom of this sodium problem?
Well, we had to ask him loads of questions and probing into the details of his workflow. And at the end of the day, we figured out that some of his sampling flasks were made of polyethylene and some others of PFA.
PE versus PFA. What's the difference? Why would this cause a problem in his analysis?
Well, there are strict recommendations on the type of sampling flask you should use depending on the application. So typically, for ICP-MS, you should be using PFA, which are pure polymers. They are the best for ICP-MS. For IC analysis, you would use PE bottles. And for HPLC or LC-MS, then glass bottles would be preferred. So basically, to put it in a nutshell, a scientist should always bear in mind that not only the analytical method is critical, but they also need to be very cautious about the sampling conditions when performing trace analysis.
Do you have any other advice to offer to the scientists performing these highly sensitive experiments?
Let me think. There's one thing for trace analysis. Rinsing is really critical. I received another call from another customer the other day who was performing this time LC-MS analysis, and he was using his flask directly from the central dishwasher. He systematically found contaminants in his blanks.
Really? From the dishwasher? And so what advice were you able to give him?
Well, that was quite easy. We really advised him to start by rinsing his glassware with eutrophic water before any kind of sampling. And of course, very quickly, his contaminant issues disappeared. So there is a rule. A rule of rinsing. First of all, when you have new bottles, when you purchase new bottles, you should always rinse them with your choppy water and ideally leave them to soak for 1 to 2 weeks. Then the recommendation is to place them in an ultrasonic bath prior to use and rinse again with your choppy water. And in general, sampling procedures typically ask you to rinse your flask 3 times with the sample before final filling up.
That sounds like really valuable advice. A little bit of work on the front end, but it sounds like in the long run, it's a good investment in keeping your sample safe. So thank you, Cecilia, for sharing your troubled waters story or your customer's troubled waters story. And perhaps we have some listeners out there who are currently struggling with unexplained results variability. Perhaps this could serve as a lesson that even the most innocuous detail in their workflow could pose a problem. And to our listeners, if you have your own troubled waters story you want to share, feel free to leave your experience in the comments section. Well, there you have it. It takes more than a great water system to keep your experiments great too. Once dispensed, highly purified water must be carefully handled to avoid accidentally introducing contaminants into your workflow. Adhering to these golden rules will ensure your sensitive analyses receive the water quality they require and deserve. And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. Let us know your thoughts in the comments. Please give this podcast a rating and share it with whomever you think might be handling ultra-pure water. See you again next time. The life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany, operates as MilliporeSigma in the US and Canada.